Welcome to Alice in Wonderland, brought to you by Intopia. Hi, I'm Charlie.
And I'm Jacinta.
We both work as consultants for Intopia Connect. We're joining the dots to make the digital world more accessible.
This podcast explores the intersection of accessibility and usability. This series will focus on World Usability Day and its theme of our health.
Because something can be accessible, but that doesn't mean it's usable.
Exactly.
Being neurodivergent, this is something we speak passionately on and have first-hand experience with, having both battled the Australian medical system to gain our diagnosis and treatment.
Which is a story for another time. For episode one, we chat with Lauren Hayes. Charlie and I met Lauren at Intopia. Lauren is a digital accessibility consultant. Lauren earned a Bachelor of Music with a focus on music therapy from the University of Melbourne in 2009. During her studies, Lauren participated in clinical placements in aged care, pediatric palliative care, psychiatry, and special education.
After working as a project officer at Women with Disabilities Victoria, Lauren began working in research and audio transcription and subsequently moved into usability testing. She also works as a freelancer, where she conducts accessibility audits on websites and apps to ensure that they meet accessibility guidelines. So welcome, Lauren.
Hi, Ren.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for spending time with us today to talk about the world of accessibility and usability for World Usability Day. So just to introduce a little bit more about yourself, can you just tell us a little bit more about who you are and maybe some assistive technologies that you use?
Sure. So I have been blind since birth and have been an assistive technology user from pretty early on, although I learned Braille initially. So Braille was my primary method of reading and writing for a number of years. But I think from the age of 9, I started using assistive technology. So using computers that had speech software installed that we call a screen reader, and that reads what is on the screen. So what you would see in print is read by the screen reader. That's a very basic explanation. It is a lot more complex than that because the way that a website or a document has been formatted will determine how the screen reader interacts with that. So if it's poorly designed, it won't read well. In addition to having Braille and speech from a Windows perspective, I'm also an iPhone user, and so the iPhone comes with speech software out of the box that you can run straight away. And so it's really exciting to see that gradually we're getting mainstream technology that's accessible from out of the box.
So Lauren, what are some of the things that people take for granted or don't realise or understand about someone who is blind or has a vision impairment? I remember you telling a story about a housemate that you had once.
Yeah, so when I was in a share house a number of years ago, I would be cooking dinner and in the middle of winter, and it would be dark by, 5:30. And that's fine with me. I don't need to put the lights on to cook, so I'd just leave them and I'd be happily, stir frying my vegetables. And when this first happened, my housemates came home and there were no lights on, so they thought no one was home until they came into the kitchen and they could hear these like cooking noises, and then flicked the lights on and realized that I was there just doing my thing, and that freaked them out quite a bit. So I tried to remember to turn the lights on since then, but it didn't always happen, so they just kind of came home expecting that I'd be just doing my housework, whatever it was, in the dark.
Yes, and it's hilarious that you have to make allowances to make other people feel better about your disability.
That's right. I had to turn the lights on because otherwise, it won't be accessible for people with sight. So it's having to accommodate their accessibility needs as well.
Over yours. That's hilarious.
Now, you mentioned a couple of barriers that you do face using your assistive tech in the everyday. PDFs, I think, was something you mentioned. What are some other notable digital barriers that you've come across both in the workplace and also in day-to-day life?
The barriers that I might come across in the workplace are probably going to be ones that I come across in everyday life because I use technology and the web so much to access information. So if a website has been designed poorly, so for example, buttons or links that aren't labeled properly, or perhaps not being able to access a certain part of the site, like filling in a form and having check boxes that won't check when you press enter or the space bar to tick a box, for example, or coming to an edit field like a date picker if you're booking a flight, for example, and you need to choose your departure and arrival dates. A lot of airline websites are really inaccessible in that sense. They have a field where you should be able to write your dates, but you can't actually type into it because of the way that it's being coded. And then if you can get to the calendar to choose a date, often those calendar aspects of the site are inaccessible. They might be kind of perhaps visually in a table. You have a table of dates, but they just read as plain text and you can't interact with them at all. Let's see, probably one of the other notable things would be a lack of image descriptions. So just coming across graphics on a page and my screen reader will just say graphic and I have no idea what the image contains or if it's relevant to what I'm looking at. If it's informative, am I missing out on any information?
Yeah. And so when you're trying to access things like healthcare, you know, through the digital space, what kind of challenges have you come across?
So I think before we get into the digital space, it's important to talk about the attitudes that can influence that. So last year I had to make a booking for a day procedure. I was going in for some minor surgery and I called the clinic and they said, oh, you'll have to fill in some forms. So I got the email and it was a PDF attachment. Now I could read the PDF, but I wasn't able to write in it at all. The only way that I could fill it in was by printing it out, and I would have had to have got someone to help me fill it in, scan it, and then resend it as a PDF. So I called them back and I said, do you have an alternative version of this form, like in a Word document or something? And they said, oh no, the PDF's all we have. Oh, do you have a carer or someone that can help you fill it in? And I guess in asking me that, and there's an assumption that I always have someone to help me and that I'm not independent in how I access things. And then by getting someone to help me fill it in, it's taking away my autonomy to do that. But it's what I had to do in the end because there was just, they had no way for me to fill in that form. So taking away some of those assumptions, I think is an important start. And then we can think about, well, how do we actually change our processes so that these forms are accessible for people to fill in themselves?
That's absolutely understandable. There's often an assumption that you have a carer with you. You have a personal assistant that's just with you all the time to take care of these details and things like that. How does that impact your daily life when you can't access things that you should? And then, you know, as an adult, your independence is taken away from you.
Often when I've joined general practice clinics, you often have to fill in a form when you arrive. And I recently joined a new clinic and was really excited because they had this whole online joining process and the form had some issues around form labels not quite being linked to their inputs in code, just getting a little bit geeky there for a second. And I filled out everything and I got to the end and it required a signature. Now it wasn't something I could type in. I had to write on the screen to sign and there was no way around it. I was trapped by this signature problem. So I ended up having to go into the clinic and one of the receptionists helped me to fill it in the waiting room. Luckily there were no people there at the time because I didn't want to have to give all my personal details in front of other patients. So I felt like my confidentiality was compromised just because something couldn't have been made accessible from the get-go. Particularly in the health space, it's quite frustrating because often when it comes to appointments and procedures, we all get really anxious about that stuff, whether we have a disability or not, where there's a whole lot of things to think about when you're going in for a medical appointment and even just a regular GP appointment can have its stresses depending on what you're going in there for. And so the last thing you want to do is to advocate for yourself when all you want to do is feel better or to know what's wrong with you. And so this assumption that you're just going to have someone with you all the time and you've got to keep explaining, no, actually I don't, or maybe in some cases I do, but I might not even want the person who is with me to help me fill in a form. All I have them there for is usually for navigation, particularly in a big hospital. They're helping me to find my way around the wards and that kind of thing.
Yeah, people don't understand. Like, there's such a thing of, oh, you just, don't you have someone that helps you? It's like, yes, I have a PA.
It just gets tiring having to explain that all the time when I just kind of want to get on with it, with a job, and not have to worry about that so that I can focus on my health.
Do you have any recommendations for enhancing the accessibility of general information and basic navigation in hospital settings? You mentioned being shown around the wards and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, not only for patients, but also visitors. It is really important to have wayfinding strategies in place. So for people who use mobile technology, perhaps thinking about things like indoor wayfinding beacons, so that can link with GPS apps that support indoor navigation. So if you're using your phone, you can load your app and it will recognize that you're in a particular medical facility, and it will give you directions to find things like reception counters, different wards, different spaces in the hospital. You still may need to rely on staff or hospital volunteers for assistance perhaps, but it's just creating a little bit more of a sense of independence for people. Equally, on hospital websites, providing some of those wayfinding directions. So instead of just having a visual map of a hospital, having some audio descriptions of the basic layout. So for example, once you walk through the main entrance, the reception counter is, say, diagonally to your right, 20 meters away, or 1 o'clock, for example. Some people prefer clock faces for the directions rather than kind of the north, south, east, west directions. So thinking about how do we describe layouts rather than just having visual maps. And then for general information, really describing clearly on websites where you can find resources that you might need as an inpatient or outpatient. I've often been on websites and I've been looking for general health information. Often hospitals have those sort of fact sheets about different conditions or procedures and what to expect, and trying to find those things can be really daunting because there is just pages and pages of stuff and they're not necessarily in obvious places. And in order to do that successfully, I think consulting with real users is so important. So having user advisory groups perhaps for hospitals, or just organizing for users to come in, paying them for their time and advising on what they would find helpful in a medical setting when they're going to be there as a patient or someone supporting a patient as well. So this, you know, that's a long answer, but there's so much work to be done that it was kind of hard to know where to start with answering that because we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, so you mentioned getting in those user groups there as sort of a way for hospitals to gain a better understanding of the needs of the people who will be using their facilities. What other aspects of the industry do you think still need to be worked on to make it more accessible, and what role can, you know, users play in that in making those improvements?
That's a great question. So a number of years ago, I was on an advisory group for a hospital in Melbourne, and we talked about a lot of the things that I spoke about previously around wayfinding and making websites more accessible. And I'm not sure what came of that advice and what happened, because I've been to that hospital since then and it felt like nothing had really improved. So I think getting advice from users is one thing, and of course we should do that, but it needs to start at a training level at all levels. So people who work in administration, in medical settings, are often your first port of call when you enter a clinic. You're dealing with reception staff who are giving you directions, who are giving you advice, who are explaining what is going to happen, who are booking your appointments. When they do their medical reception or admin courses, I think that disability and accessibility need to be incorporated much more, so that they're not kind of learning about it on the job. And then from moving on then to the clinician level, I think at university, disability and accessibility isn't talked about enough in courses. When I've spoken to my GPs or friends of mine who have studied medicine, the common story is that they might get a couple of modules in a semester about disability or kind of usability more broadly if they're lucky, but disability is often viewed as a medical problem and they're not really aware of kind of what we would call the social model of disability. So looking at how barriers in society make people with disabilities feel disabled, I guess that's a kind of a very broad definition, but you know, walking into a hospital, there's no wayfinding signs for me to use in a digital way, as I've talked about. So that means that because those barriers haven't been considered, the hospital environment becomes less accessible. So there's a whole lot of systemic change that needs to happen in order for us to get to the ideal booking systems, appointment reminders, access to results, access to your patient information, scripts, prescription instructions, all of those things. A lot of systemic change needs to happen before we can get there.
And with that, you know, we were suddenly forced a couple of years ago into being online and a greater emphasis on telehealth when the pandemic hit and everyone was in COVID lockdowns. What was your experience when suddenly everything was forced to go online and you couldn't go in and access things personally?
Yeah, in some ways that was a lot nicer because I could have a telehealth appointment, so I didn't have the stress of finding my way into a clinic and then potentially dealing with patronizing staff who talked to me like I was five. I could just get a call from my doctor at home, or and usually that was by phone, which was great. There was one telehealth appointment that I had, which was on an online platform. Thankfully, it was accessible. I was really worried when I was given the link that I might have some access issues, but I was able to log in successfully. I even had hold music and I could choose what music I wanted to listen to while I was waiting, which was kind of fun to play with, and that was accessible, and was able to see the buttons for turning my camera on and off, all of those things. And so I was very relieved when that happened, but it did make me think, oh gosh, what if this wasn't accessible, or there was somebody who just wasn't as tech savvy trying to navigate this system, or you know, because every hospital has their own systems, so there are probably going to be some inconsistencies across those telehealth designs. So I think moving forward, if telehealth is going to remain something that we use, thinking about making those telehealth appointments kind of universal in how we access them.
Yep, that's a good point.
What I also really liked during the pandemic was that e-scripts were introduced. So if I needed prescription medication, I would get a text message with a link, and I could click the link, take it to the pharmacist, and there was a QR code that they could scan with a little device that they had, and it showed them the information about my script and the dosage and all of those things. And that was much easier than dealing with pieces of paper that I couldn't read and would potentially lose. I think what would be great in addition to those e-scripts is having details of your medication. So when you click the link and your script is scanned, you could then perhaps be sent another link which contains the side effects, the instructions for when to take your medication, all the things that you would get in the leaflet, in the box, but have a way of reading that online.
Yeah. So you mentioned some improvements that you would like to see, especially around e-scripts and getting more information about the prescription medication that an individual might receive. If you could cherry pick some improvements to make health more accessible for your own experience, what would be some of the key things that you would like to see changed?
Oh, so many things. I feel like it's like choosing a favorite child or something. I'll take a broad approach and look at it from the booking process. It's great to be able to call a receptionist and book something over the phone, and sometimes it is nice to talk to a person. But if it's late at night and the reception is closed, it's nice to be able to go online and use something like HotDoc. For a while there, it was accessible and I was able to book successfully. And then more recently, I've noticed that I've run into difficulties and I've ended up having to call the clinic. So ensuring that that's accessible, any forms you need to fill in should be designed accessibly from the beginning, and a user should be able to have a way of submitting those forms accessibly as well, not just printing them off and bringing them in to the appointment. And then I think with results as well, I've had a couple of scans recently where the report has been a printed piece of paper outlining the results, and it also contains images of the scans, so you could get to see pretty pictures of your insides and that kind of thing. I would love it if there was a way for that to be more accessible. So having an accessible e-copy, perhaps with descriptions of those images, or through perhaps sonification, so audiographs of scans. I mean, these are just very kind of vague ideas at the moment, but and 3D printing of information for that as well, or at the very least what the written report contains, so that I could read it independently and ask all the questions that I wanted to about what it meant.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that kind of leads in nicely to, for people who are looking for advice on how to get into the accessibility advocacy, and particularly in the health sector, why don't you tell them to, like, how to get started and everything?
I feel like there's not necessarily a straightforward route. Even though I try and advocate for my own access needs in health, I often just feel like I'm hitting brick walls, and all I can do is ask the questions. So asking about having information in an accessible digital format, asking when I'm getting my results in print, do you have this in a different format? And usually the answer is no. Occasionally it will be a yes. But, you know, often that feels like it's not enough, and you might not want to advocate, and that's actually okay, because we shouldn't have to. But I think when we feel well and able to, starting to ask those questions is definitely important. And, you know, often you feel quite powerless as a patient with a disability to create that change. I think it's probably going to take more than us as just individuals for that to happen, and it will need some more collective action of different accessibility organisations and advocacy organisations.
Thank you so much for today, Lauren. This has been really great and insightful, and we really appreciate you sharing your stories and your insights around accessibility, especially in the health sector, which is such an important thing, especially for people with disability who quite often have higher access needs to medical help and assistance. So we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Allies in Wonderland is brought to you by Intopia. Your hosts were Charlie Parker and Jacinta Gregory. The series producer was Fabian Laffam. Audio production was by Tess Hutley. Research and story production was done by Lauren Hayes and Tess Herbert. We'll be back with part 2.